Welcome to this IFRS Foundation podcast, which will focus on the September meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board. The meeting took place in London on the 19th and 20th of September 2018. My name is Matt Tilling and I'm the Director of Education here at the Foundation. Today I'm joined by the Chair of the Board, Hans Hugewurst, and Vice Chair, Sue Lloyd, to talk through the latest meeting and other developments. The September meeting was the first board meeting in our new office in Canary Wharf. Before we go into the board discussions, Hans, how has the move from the city to Canary Wharf gone?
Very well. We had to leave our old office. The lease had expired and it was really not fit for purpose anymore. It needed to be renovated completely. Instead, we chose to move to a new office space in Canary Wharf. And while we were all a bit sad to leave the City of London for Canary Wharf, I must say that the move has gone remarkably smooth. Our staff did a fantastic job arranging this. And our new offices here in Canary Wharf are much better, more spacious, and providing a very modern, open, collaborative environment. So we are all very pleased. We had our first meeting in a new boardroom, which is also less cramped than the old one, and with very good technology. And we look forward to many years of discussion and development of high quality standards in our high quality office space.
And this month at the board, there really were two main topics of discussion, and I thought we might start with primary financial statements, Hans. Now, a number of topics linked to the project were discussed, and I wondered if you might take us through a couple of the highlights of that project.
Well, first of all, we had an extensive discussion about how to apply something like EBIT for banks. As you know, we have been spending a lot of time to develop a subtotal for earnings before interest and taxation, which is basically operating income, widely used by the investor community. Now, obviously, this will work for, let's say, normal companies, but for banks, EBIT doesn't work. Nobody works with EBIT because interest is such a part of operating income for banks that it makes no sense. So the staff has been trying to develop principles that would say, well, if you're a bank, you don't need to worry about EBIT. And that is more easily said than done, but the staff made some very good proposals, and I think we made very good progress in developing principles for making this exception. Staff will further develop these principles and will come back to the board at a later stage. We have also spent quite a bit of time on discussing the possible development of requirements for companies to present unusual or infrequent income and expenses in the statement of financial performance. This is information that, which is very important for investors. Investors always like to see whether the income of a company is persistent or not in order to better predict future cash flows. However, it is very difficult to develop guidance or definition of what is unusual income, what is infrequent income. So we have asked the staff to develop this guidance and explore whether this can be done in a sensible way. So still a lot of work to be done before we can decide that we will introduce this in the financial statements.
And finally, Hans, the board has decided to move the primary financial statements project from the research program to the standard setting program. Can you tell us a little bit about what this means for the project?
Well, that means that we are sufficiently confident that we have clearly defined the issues, that we have identified that there is an accounting problem and that there is a solution in sight. And that we feel sufficiently confident that we have developed sufficient ideas that we can reasonably sure that it will result in a standard. So we are now shifting from the research phase to the standard setting phase, which means that we feel confident that we can bring this project to successful conclusion in the sense that we will develop a standard.
Sue, I'd like to move on to the other main topic for discussion this week, dynamic risk management. And I want to start with a discussion that wasn't really part of the agenda as such, but the board had a really interesting conversation about the objective of this project and its scope. And really, is this project intended to capture all aspects of risk and risk management?
No, it's not. So we're not thinking that we're going to be able to provide information about everything that's going on, but what we're trying to do is to provide better information about the impact that a company's risk management activities have on their economic resources, and in particular we're focusing on the impact of a bank's dynamic management of interest rate risk. Also, what it isn't our job to do, and what we're not trying to do, is to sort of opine on whether we think banks have got the right level of risk or they're making the right decisions about their risk management, but we want to help investors to better understand the risk management activities that are being undertaken and really to focus on how well management have achieved their risk management objectives.
And this month, the board discussed two key elements of the dynamic risk management project. Imperfect alignment was key to this.
That's right. And so maybe start with what imperfect alignment is. See how well I do. We start off with a bank designating particular assets and liabilities that it has as the focus for the dynamic risk management accounting. And they look at those assets and liabilities, work out what they want to achieve, what interest rate risk profile they want to take on. And that, given the assets and liabilities they have, there's a particular perfect derivative that if they entered into it would achieve the perfect outcome. Now, I use the word perfect loosely there. It's not the word we're going to use in our actual formal documentation, but that's the basic idea. What we're calling it is the benchmark derivative. And the idea of imperfect alignment is to say that we would take that benchmark or perfect derivative that would achieve the perfect outcome, and we compare that derivative with the derivatives they actually took out in practice and see how different those two things are. And that's really the information we're trying to capture with this idea of imperfect alignment. So the board agreed with the staff that that's the way that we should think about the reporting on dynamic risk management. We agreed that an entity should measure the mismatch between those derivatives on an ongoing basis and disclose information about the extent to which they've achieved their objectives and the extent of the mismatch between those derivatives. And in the case of over-hedging, so say for example I needed to hedge risk of 100 and I actually took out a derivative of 110, so you had an over-hedge. In that case, the difference in the fair value of your perfect derivative of 100 and your actual derivative of 110 would be presented in P&L as the indicator of imperfect alignment. So it's a bit like the idea of ineffectiveness we have today in hedge accounting. If there was under-hedging, so if the derivative they entered into was, for example, too small compared with the perfect benchmark derivative, then that information would be provided about that through disclosure, similar to our approach to cash flow hedge accounting. We also decided that the banks would use qualitative and quantitative analysis on a prospective basis to determine whether or not the hedging that they were taking out would qualify for application of the model.
Sue, one of the other topics that was discussed this month at the board was about the classification of liabilities. Can you tell us a little bit about that discussion?
Yes, and so here we're talking about the classification of liabilities in the sense of what's a current liability and what's a non-current liability. And it's a project that we've been working on for a little while. We had an exposure draft a few years ago, and then we decided not to re-deliberate that until we finished the conceptual framework, which we've now done. So we're coming back to look at the comments we got on the exposure draft. And really what the staff did this week was to update us and remind us of where we've got before and to get the board to agree on next steps. So it was a sort of reminding us of where we were. So we agreed on the strategy going forward. And the other thing I'd like to note on this is sort of not from a technical front, but it was an important moment for us because it was the first time we'd had technical staff from our Asia Oceania office present a technical project at the board table. And so we were really pleased to be working with the staff there in this way.
In addition to the board meeting this month, we've also had a meeting of the Interpretations Committee. And it was quite a full agenda with a lot of interesting topics. And I would certainly encourage anyone listening to go and read the update that's available on our website. But I would like to pick up on a couple of the topics, and one of them seems to be a topic that really is a topic of interest at the moment in many different fields, and that's cryptocurrencies.
So the board talked about cryptocurrencies, I think it was in July, and the outcome of that discussion was to ask the Interpretations Committee whether they would do some analysis for us on the current accounting under our standards for cryptocurrencies and also for initial coin offerings, and for the committee to give us their thoughts on whether that resulted in useful information and whether they had any suggestions for us to think about from a standard setting perspective. So it's a bit of an unusual discussion for the committee. We weren't asking them to think about standard setting per se or to issue an agenda decision, but rather to give information for the board. So we had an interesting discussion about the application of our existing standards, and the committee had quite a few suggestions for us about what we should do or not do on some future standard setting. So the next step on that will be the staff will report back to the board what the committee has suggested.
There were a number of other interesting topics that were discussed, and those include liabilities in relation to a joint operator's interest in a joint operation, and also a completely different topic, the determination of exchange rate when there is a long-term lack of exchangeability, which on the surface seemed like mouthfuls, but I think both of them had some interesting aspects.
Yeah, both really interesting questions and both live questions in the market, so I think really recommend that people have a look at the work the committee's done here. But to touch on them both briefly, so on the joint operator question, we looked at a very specific question, and this was about the case where there's a joint operation and the lead operator in the joint operation enters into a lease of a piece of equipment. It signs the document, but it's done so with a view to the asset being used by the joint operation. And the question that came to us is, what should the lead operator put in its financial statements? And the committee concluded that there's sufficient guidance in our existing standards, so we don't need to do standard setting. But perhaps more importantly, they also concluded that the lead operator in that case would recognise the entire lease liability in its financial statements. Now, it's important to point out that that's a tentative agenda decision, so that's now out for comment, so people who are interested in that should comment, and it will be subsequently deliberated again by the committee. The other topic that you mentioned was about exchange rates where there's a long-term lack of exchangeability, and this was a very specific discussion about the difficult situation that we have in Venezuela at the moment and what companies should be doing when they are presenting their results about translating and what exchange rate do they use in a country with the situation Venezuela has. And the committee answered a very specific question. And the question that the committee answered was that in the situation with a fact pattern like Venezuela, and they're very specific that it's about Venezuela, a preparer needs to look at the official exchange rate and see whether it meets the definition of a closing rate. So don't just use it blindly. And what does that mean in layman's speak? We're really saying, does the preparer have the ability to access that exchange rate and actually exchange currency at that rate? Now that, of course, so that's a final agenda decision on that very specific point. That then, of course, leaves open the question, well, if you conclude it's not the closing rate, what do you do? And the committee has agreed to do some further research on this and to look at potential narrow scope standard setting to talk about what you do in those situations as a second step.
And again, there's a much fuller discussion and a number of other very interesting topics that are available in the update. Hans, before we finish, I think it's worth mentioning a number of other events. It is a very busy time for the board and the foundation. First, there was a meeting of the Advisory Council.
Yes, in early September we had a meeting with our Advisory Council on strategic issues. And as usual, we got a lot of good advice by the Council. We talked about, for example, the issue of timeliness of our standard setting, if there is one issue of criticism of the on the board, it's that often we don't meet our deadlines. On the other hand, we also want to fully engage with our stakeholders, and our stakeholders often ask for more time to respond to our questions. So we asked the Advisory Council how to deal with these two possibly conflicting demands on our work. and how to balance timeliness with proper due process. And we got a lot of good suggestions in that respect. We also talked about the way in which we engage with our stakeholders, our comment letter process, how we can possibly improve that with better use of technology, and whether we should have a more flexible approach to different kinds of stakeholders, preparers, investors, etc.
And of course, if you're interested to find out more about the discussions at the Advisory Council, there is another podcast available where we talk with Joanna Perry about those discussions. Hans, in the first week of October, we have our annual World Standard Setters Conference, a very big and important conference for us.
Yeah, that is always a very interesting conference. We have more than 100 delegates from over 50 countries, in addition to a number of representatives of international organizations. They come to talk to us about all the issues that we are working on. We will discuss a wide range of topics, among which, for example, the conceptual framework. And delegates will receive updates on our projects. It's a conference with a high content of education. And it's just a really fantastic event, allowing us to engage with a key stakeholder group, many of whom we don't see on a regular basis. So it's a very good occasion to catch up with people.
And on the heels of that, we're also going to have our trustee meeting in South Africa.
Yeah, we'll have a trustee meeting in Johannesburg. It's a very important meeting. It's the last meeting that will be chaired by our chairman of trustees, Michel Prada. Unfortunately, he is leaving us. I have worked with Michel for more than 10 years, also in my previous work as a securities regulator in the Netherlands. And Michel has been a fantastic person to work with, a lot of wisdom and fantastic personal qualities. So I will personally miss him very much, but also the organization as a whole. Fortunately, we have found a very good successor to Michel, Mr. Erkki Liikanen, former governor of the Central Bank of Finland, who has also been a commissioner in Europe, so a person who knows all the issues and who is very well connected. And I'm sure that I will be able to work with him as well as I did with Michel, and that he will be a very effective chairman of the trustees.
Well, that brings us to the end of the September podcast. Thank you, Hans and Sue, and thank you to our listeners. Any feedback on these podcasts, please email communications@ifrs.org. As always, the full summary of the board's discussion and the decisions at the September meeting can be found in the ISB update on the IFRS Foundation's website. Thank you very much.